Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Thursday, September 14th, 2017. James Corbett, this is usually his time to appear on Financial Survival, but he had a meeting to go to, and I don't know if it was in Singapore or someplace, or Copenhagen, I believe it was, he had to leave to. So he will be returning in his normal slot 2 weeks from today, so make sure you tune in. And today you have Alfred and me. So glad to be here, and I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Oh, you are here, so you're here for the whole hour, so.
Not necessarily. You know that yet. We're not giving any prophecy. We're just here at the beginning of the hour. We'll see
if I figured,
I stick around until the end of the hour.
I figured one of these days you're just going to hang up. April Fools, right?
Uh-huh.
Gold today. There was no hanging up on gold today, but like it has for the past couple of days, it managed $5 up today at $1,328. Silver was up or down a penny at $17.84. Platinum was up two at $986. Palladium took another beating today, down 15 at $925. The USDX today was down 0.25 at 92.14. And crude oil, I don't have the prices on crude oil. Let's see, 49.67, up 0.75% for the day. Paper markets today, the Dow was up 48 points. I just get tired of saying these numbers. 22,206. The NASDAQ was down 31 points at 64.29. The S&P was down 3 points at 2,495. You have 10-year yield up 0.03 at 220. And let's see. European Asian markets are pretty much unchanged overnight. Equifax shares, they plunged again today, so they're looking at 35% in the past week. And when they get all said and done with it, I wouldn't doubt if they wouldn't be down 75% after their little episode. And it's not a little episode. It's affecting over 140 million people and their credit ratings. I'm in the process of trying to get all my reports frozen and everything like that. And it's a task. It's like, geez, Luigi. And they don't make it easy. You know, you'd think with all this great technology that they keep telling us that we should have, it should be fairly simple. You know, put your name in, your thing, hit freeze, and it should be done. But no, it isn't that simple. So again, you know, I think they're fooling us to some degree with this technology. And so either these websites don't have enough power to, you know, to be able to handle the amount of people going on there. Man, you're looking at 140 million people, you know, going on all at once. Yeah, that would be quite a load on their website. But, you know, come on. These are companies, billions of dollars of, you know, companies they're valued at. So, you know, spend a little money on your website and make it easy for the people after you screwed up. I also saw that there was a civil lawsuit going on with Equifax. And so I should share that information. I have it on my desk, not readily available, but we can.
I have it readily available.
We could talk
some of it. There may be several lawsuits against Equifax, but there is a guy who's an entrepreneur. He's a college student taking law, and he started up a website a couple of years ago, maybe even a year ago. I don't know how long this has been going on, but he started up a website because he has a tendency to get parking tickets and traffic tickets. And so he looked into how do you deal with this and how do you fight him. And he posted his strategy on the internet. And it's under a website called Do Not Pay, all right? And he took for dealing with traffic tickets. Well, he's had 375,000, well, not traffic tickets, parking tickets, 375,000 parking tickets in New York, Seattle, and the United Kingdom that have used his strategy and apparently successfully. And after this problem broke out with Equifax, where they released the information on 143 million people, he looked into it, and he realized that he could set up a system on the internet where you can sue Equifax in the appropriate courts for $15,000 a pop, right? And he can get it done in mere minutes. This kid's a genius, is what it comes to. He's still in law school, and the key to this is he doesn't charge any money for it. If he charged money, he'd be practicing law without a license. He makes these strategies available for free, and it doesn't cost you anything. You can go do not pay, all right? And it allows, again, people to sue Equifax for 15 minutes. He talked about the Equifax problem. He said, 3 days ago, I realized I could definitely be doing something for this. Guy's name is Joshua Browder. He says, I was doing research, and I found that no one is going down to small claims court on the state level. Despite the pending federal lawsuits, and there may be, God knows how many there are of those, Browder sees small claims court as the ideal way to deal with this without involving costly lawyers or complex cases that could last years. I think people should be empowered to do this themselves. Instead of taking Equifax to federal court, they could take Equifax to small claims court. In a lot of these states, they're not allowed lawyers. There are no legal fees. The state judges are more sympathetic and more fair. They don't take kindly to big corporations pushing people around. So in any case, you go up there and he says, basically, it's a question of putting your name and your address and into the computer, and the computer will generate the necessary forms where you can file small claims court in a small claims court that's in your state and close to you. Huh? And it depends on the court. Some of them have a maximum you can sue for is $10,000. Some of them are $15,000. But the implication here, again, this guy has allegedly stopped 375,000 parking tickets. The implication here is there could be tens of thousands, really millions, of individuals who say, yeah, I'll take $15,000. And I'm not going to hire an attorney the rest of it. I'm just going to get the paperwork, file it in a small claims court. And what will happen? I guarantee you that Equifax cannot go to every small claims court in the country trying to defend this. They're going to have to basically give up the $10,000 or $15,000 that's allowed in each court, assuming this kid's his legal strategy is correct. But
well, I think
this is pretty impressive, and it's really a revolutionary strategy. It's a way of suing without having to hire lawyers. It's astonishing.
But I think there's also a bigger and civil lawsuits that are going on.
Absolutely, they're massive. Those are people point. For millions and millions of dollars.
I mean, that's interesting.
But they won't ever collect, or at least they won't collect.
Most civil lawsuits, don't, that I'm aware of. I mean, you see them paraded every night on, between the commercials, for any type of medication that's been created in the past 10 years, 20 years, that causes all kinds of death and ill. So, there's all those kinds of lawsuits. And I don't know of anyone that's ever had one pay off, heard about one. I'm sure there are somehow.
Oh, yeah. Well, what happens if you have a good lawsuit? They'll settle with you before you get to court.
Yeah.
All right. You'll take the settlement before you go to court.
Medical
malpractice. If you don't have a good lawsuit, they'll fight with you.
Medical malpractice is one of the hardest.
And not only that, the government's put a cap on it where I think in most instances you may not be able to sue for more than $250,000.
Not for medical malpractice.
I may be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure government put a cap on them. And you can't sue the doctors or whatever, but there's a $250,000 cap on most medical lawsuits, which means it's hard to even get an attorney to take the case.
I mean, that was the whole problem with doctors. They couldn't afford the malpractice insurance.
Yeah, now they can afford it because they can't sue. Where's the happy medium? We've gone from too much one way to too much the other way.
I worked for an attorney, and we used to get tons of letters and people wanting appointments because they felt that they were, that they had a malpractice situation that, they wanted to see what they could do. And I can't tell you, I mean, they'd pick one out of hundreds, maybe thousands.
Yeah.
I mean, because those are the hardest to prove, because doctors will stick up for one another. And I think everyone has experienced something where you didn't think the doctor handled something properly, so you go get a second opinion, or the guy will say, well, you know, he should have done this, he should have done that, but he did the best that he could do. I mean, and right away they will eliminate any, you know, any opening for, you know, they don't want to get involved, and they don't want to, you know.
They understand if they say something bad about Dr. Smith, says something bad about Dr. Jones, Jones may turn around and sue him. So they said, well, he did okay. You know, I'm not going to say anything because I might get sued too. I'm just keeping my mouth shut. If you want to buy, if you want to take a couple prescriptions, I'd be glad to help you out. But don't ask any more questions about who's doing a good job and a bad job.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, it's one of the saddest. I used to sit and read this information and read these, you know, interviews and so forth. And I'll tell you what, it's some of the saddest things that you'll ever read, you know, because people are hurting. You know, they've been hurt or they've lost life. A family member was lost. And it's terrible, you know, what people go through in this health system. And this was how many years ago? It was 35 years ago. So I can only imagine what it is today. It's horrible.
People start carving on you. This is dangerous business.
But
you hire a surgeon. This is dangerous stuff.
Well, you know what? Not only the doctors carving on people. It's, you know, people looking for reimbursement or maybe a quick buck or something. You know,
they see
some of these awards that are millions of dollars, and well, my doctor did me wrong, maybe I should. And you know, no one is perfect.
You know, it's all right if I lost a leg, as long as I can get rich out of a deal. I can still hop around, make it to the bar on my $1 million or whatever I've got off this thing.
But yeah, it was one of the saddest and but anyway, that's why I didn't stay. But today there was another word coming out of Christopher Cole. He is a trader who runs a hedge fund, and he's saying that, hey, you know, these markets are not going to last. He says volatility is still very low. He says, but fear is increasing. At least that's what he's seeing in his hedge fund. And he goes on and he talks about, you know, the end to the second longest bull market in modern financial history. And he understands it's fashionable also. And we've seen this time and time again every time we have a bull market. And, you know, he talks about the VIX, and he goes on and, you know, the VIX had closed at the financial crisis at 90. And, you know, we've talked about it. It's gone, dipped into the eights. Currently, it's like yesterday, it was like around 10.5. I don't know what it was today. I haven't checked. So he talks about there's no volatility. It's the same thing that Goldman Sachs came out and said. It's like, hey, there's, you know, it's just too calm. It's too quiet.
Is he saying that because there's no volatility, there is maximum greed? Is that what he's saying?
Does
volatility induce fear?
Hey, everybody's in there playing the game. It's greed. You know, but behind the little scenes, he sees that because of there's this no volatility, a lack of volatility, it's a false peace that people are trading on, that they're accepting, and they're ignoring all the signs that are out there. And he makes his living, and he invested in this hedge fund back in 2012 with $1 million, and he's now sitting around $200 to $300 million on his hedge fund. So he, you know, for a new kid on the block in 2012, of course, I mean, who could make a couple $100 million when you're in that business from 2012? I mean, you had the market go from 7,000 to 22,000. You'd have to be an idiot not to make some money. But anyway, the point is, he's looking at this and he's talking about there's no volatility. And what he says at the end of this market is what really interests me. He says, volatility is an instrument of truth. And the more you deny the truth, the more truth you will find you through volatility. If central banks want to keep saving the day, that is fine. But volatility will then be transmuted through other forms like populism, socialism, identity politics, and threaten the fabric of democracy. And he says that is something that my hedge fund will never be able to protect. And I think this is what we're seeing. I said this earlier today on a program. when we talk about the illusions and we talk about reality, the reality is the truth, and we're not seeing it. And you're seeing it pop up in the demonstrations in Charlottesville. You're seeing it pop up in people's behavior. You're seeing it pop up with Bernie Sanders and his acceptance of socialism. I mean, an American politician claiming to be a socialist. I mean, how bizarre is that? And so we are seeing these signs. And I think he's spot on. You're seeing it pop up in various forms in society and in our politics. And it's only a matter of time until it pops in to where these markets will just drop violently.
Well, they're saying, the way I'm understanding it, they're saying if the volatility is minimized, meaning the price doesn't go up dramatically today and down dramatically tomorrow and back up and back down, as long as the price just keeps on ramping up at a fairly steady rate, it's evidence that something's going on here. It's not normal.
There's no reaction
to move
anything.
That way. Yeah,
just,
I know. That's
just
the thing.
Like
they're not
the
reacting
CME
to anything. Somebody's got a computer program that says, I want you to increase by 1.18% per day or per week or whatever, and the computers they up and down, but they manage to generate that.
That's but so what else is going on behind the scenes?
Well, what's going on behind the scenes has been concealed, and that's going in the argument is it's going to break loose.
Absolutely.
You can conceal it for a while, but the time is coming when all of a sudden the truth will out and everybody say, oh my gosh, what happened?
But in the meantime, this safety net, this illusion that things are calm and steady is breaking out because the reality is what we see in the streets. Reality is the social unrest we see. The reality is, you know, all the things that we see, we talk about on these programs, but yet the markets, there's no actions. There's no
but he's
reaction,
not suggesting
directions.
That he's not suggesting that because the market has no volatility and it's not a release for a certain amount of political and social energy, he's not suggesting that that's the reason we see riots, demonstrations, political unrest. I assume he's saying this is coincidental, but it's part and parcel of the same thing. Cool. It's not a cause and effect, if you catch my drift. People aren't rioting because the stock market isn't coming down. True?
I think it's a reality that the reality that things are not well, and it is covering up, because you have to have volatility to some degree. And when you have no volatility,
that means you have a marriage where nobody argues.
And we know where that
leads. We all know that's not a possibility.
And that always leads to divorce.
Mm-hmm.
It always leads to a divorce.
Either that or commercials, and that's what we're going to have right now, are commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
There's no turning back. Even while we sleep, we will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom, co-host. And the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Alfred. Oh, Alfred. Wasn't there a commercial? Oh, Alfred. Anyway, Mint State 64. It's a great buy. People are buying them, so we're selling them like hotcakes, folks. The price did rise a little bit today with the rise in gold, $1,495. It's still a steal considering your American gold bullion coins would be selling for, you know, $1,300. And let's see what they'd be selling for. 1328 point plus, they'd be selling for $1,390. So it's still a buy. $100, you go from a bullion coin, which is nice, a bullion coin, but to a Mint State 64, $20 St. Gaudens. $1,495, you get performance, it outpaces bullion in fear-driven markets, you get the privacy, and you get the protection from confiscation. They're great coins to have in your portfolio, and at these prices, you really cannot go wrong. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. In the peak of the fear, back in 2010, when everybody thought that the dollar was gonna, you know, be reset, these were selling for $2,500. So a great buy. The premiums, you know, the industry. I talk to my buyers every day, and these are just coins that you're basically stealing. They will go higher. They will outpace bullion. So give us a call, 800-375-4188. And we also have dgscoins.net, dgscoins.net. Make sure you visit our website and sign up for our weekly newsletter. There's just two things I wanted to talk about before we talk about other things. No chuckle there, Al. I heard it.
Yeah, I'm chuckling. I'm trying to suppress it, but I'm chuckling.
I heard that.
Two things we want to talk about before we talk about the third thing.
All right. Donald Trump, President Trump, on today, I don't know if it's been released already or not, is expected to extend sanctions relief to Iran. U.S. officials said retaining for now the U.S. commitment to the landmark 2015 nuclear agreement, whose fate nonetheless remains uncertain. So he is expected to extend the sanctions relief to Iran. Mr. Trump is a severe critic of the nuclear agreement. A couple of times he has informed Congress that Iran is meeting its obligations under the deal, but then he told the Wall Street Journal in July he doesn't expect to certify in October that Tehran is in compliance. So I don't know how he can do that, how he can certify that they are in meeting their obligations and then come around and say that Tehran he's not going to certify them. So I guess number one, we have to wait to see what actually is released today from the White House as far as his extending the sanctions to Iran. Not sure what type of with the situation we see with North Korea, if that will have any impact. But I also see where the South Korea, their delegation is asking Washington for nuclear weapons. So I guess that's one thing. That's one way to put North Korea in its place, give Japan and South Korea nuclear weapons. So
I how can that make any sense?
I don't know.
You know, this is like Chicago asking for nuclear weapons to attack Milwaukee. You understand? I guarantee that's too close. You can't fire nuclear weapons from South Korea into North Korea without having both countries being suffering from nuclear fallout.
You know, that might be enough for you know, North Korea to say, well, now I'm surrounded, but he already is to some degree, but so we'll see what happens today.
I would bet that what Trump's doing is he's trying to pressure Iran to stop supporting North Korea, or at least reduce its support for North Korea.
Perhaps.
And
I bet
that's the reason why he's saying, okay, these guys are meeting their obligations, at least in some regards. And he's doing it in part with a secret deal to curtail their support for North Korea. The idea perhaps is if they can shut off North Korea's support from China, from Iran, from Russia, from wherever, if they can really isolate them and nail them down to where they can't get anything imported, it may be that they'll just self-destruct. And maybe that's what he's trying, but who knows? Yeah. The art of the deal.
Well, there is a big meeting next week at the UN Assembly, so we'll have to see what comes out of that, because I'm sure that will be a main topic of conversation.
Will there be an open bar?
I'm sure there will be.
How about a dance?
Oh, there's going to be lots of dancing at the UN. perhaps not with music,
Dancing.
Going to be lots of dancing, yes. Today there was a recent poll conducted by the University of Pennsylvania that finds out that residents of the United States are poorly informed about constitutional provisions. I don't think that's any surprise to anyone listening to this program.
Constitution? What's the meaning of Constitution?
What is that? That's some kind of old document. The newly released survey suggests Americans cannot name a single right protected by the First Amendment. According to Penn's Annenberg Public Policy Center, it showed 37% could not name any of the five rights protected by the First Amendment. And just about half, 48%, could name freedom of speech. In addition, the survey found that 33% of those polled were unable to name one of the three branches of the U.S. government, such as legislative, executive, and judicial. And only 26% of the respondents could name the three branches. The reason I think this was important, because oftentimes you have these various radio shows and TV people go out on the street and they ask people these questions and so forth, and you don't know how they, you know, will change the questions or, you know, the answers to make it appropriate for whatever venue they might be. So, you know, you might get a lot of truth. Not sure you're going to get all the truth. So I thought this one conducted, and again, you can have the same thing here, but I think it has a little bit more credibility that, these are pretty sad. Sad.
Yeah, but why are people so ignorant?
Why?
It's because they're not taught in school.
Of course not.
We should make it our business to lean on our educators and make them understand that these kids are going to get a semester of the Constitution, at least one semester of the Constitution, and another semester on the Declaration of Independence, and another semester on the Articles of Confederation, and another semester on the Northwest Territorial Ordinance. The four of those documents comprise the organic law of the United States of America. They're going to get at least four semesters, and probably should go all the way. There should be semesters where we teach kids how to deal with contracts. We have kids getting out of high school who can drive, but they don't know how to handle a traffic ticket.
They can't even write a business letter.
I understand. Well, they may not all need business letters, whether that happens or
they
not.
They do.
That's certainly helpful
part,
and it should be available.
It's just part of... No, they should. My gosh. Well, they don't. Some people don't even know how to write a check. Tell me that's not important.
What was that movie with... I don't remember. It was a TV series with the two girls back 10 years ago. Paris Hilton and her girlfriend, and somebody gave them a check while they're working on a job, and they looked at it, what the heck is this? All they knew was plastic. They didn't even know what a check is. But my point is, it's not an oversight that our children are ignorant about
Absolutely.
Fundamental law. It's the way the government wants them. If it was an oversight, they'd have children. Some schools would be teaching the Constitution. Some schools would be doing it. Maybe most of them wouldn't. Some of them would. Some of them wouldn't. But we don't have that. We have basically universal ignorance in terms of the Constitution and the organic law of the United States of America. And it's not an accident. It's what people in positions of power want. They want the American people to be dumb as a box of rocks, and they've pretty much achieved their goal. It's up to us to educate ourselves on our own now, because our government has failed to do so while we're in grade school and high school. It should be taught. I mean, they should start giving people some indication what's going on with the Constitution back in sixth grade. Maybe before that. They should start to become familiar with it. I don't mean they have to study the details, but they should become familiar with it. They should know, and they should be able to ask the kind of, answer the kinds of questions that the University of Pennsylvania was posing to these people. And, in fact, it's a mystery to us, and it's not an accidental mystery. The government wants you people dumb. They can take advantage of your ignorance, and they want you ignorant.
And it's the same thing, and I don't want to go here and stay here long, but it's the same with your finances. They want they don't want you to control your money. Mm-hmm. They want to have people called financial planners that are all tied to Wall Street, or the Wall Street's all tied to Washington, and they control you with your thoughts, with what you should be investing in, and so on. They don't want you to own gold and silver because you're independent. They don't want you independent.
They don't want you to even look at it, because you start feeding the Constitution to kids and somebody's going to say, wait a second, Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 says no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt. When did they amend the Constitution to remove gold and silver coin? And the answer is never. It's never been amended. They are acting illegally. And if anybody bothered to read the Constitution and see what it says, they say, wait a second, this doesn't seem right. No, it's not. It's unconstitutional.
But that's how they rule this land anymore, Al. They just write an executive order.
But they rule, their rule depends on our
ignorance. They just do everything by executive order. What?
Their rule depends on our ignorance. If the American people in general,
people
and I don't just mean one man who stands up and speaks, I mean the jury has to know this too.
And the people have accepted that any executive order, that's how countries are run. That's how our country is run anymore. By who needs a constitution? We just do executive orders.
I understand.
And it is all by design. But, you know, but and we do, and with the money, and as I mentioned, so folks, it affects us in every branch of our lives by not knowing.
Yeah, I know. And the only way you're going to get out of this, you know, I talk to people, I've been involved in legal reform issues for, I don't know, 30 years now, probably one way or the other. And people get all impressed. Say, oh, my gosh, the government has guns and clubs and pepper spray and they can throw you in jail and the rest of that sort of thing. They can oppress us with their physical might. People are all impressed by that. That's very visible and obvious. And, oh, my gosh, I'm afraid of the nightstick and the rest of that. The government does not get you with its guns and clubs and pepper spray. You are ensnared in a trap composed of words. That's what gets you. And virtually everyone is ignorant about the language. Everyone is ignorant about the words that we know in our, that are there in the Constitution, if you care to read them and study them and understand them. They're there. If you knew the words, you could avoid, you could keep, you could hold the government at bay. Without the words, you can't hold them at bay. You need the words, and you can get these. We could get them out of our grade schools, out of our high schools. Could be there. Could be helping. I don't mean that it'll change the world, but it would make a great improvement if children understood what was really going on in the Constitution, and they understood this is what's right, this is what's wrong.
But so anyway, I thought that was fairly interesting, and again, it's just another sign of the times. And we had a caller on the earlier program this morning, and he talked about, you know, with these DACA kids and stuff like that. And he said, sit them down, send them to class, let them learn the concept, and which is, he's absolutely correct, you know. Yep. And those that don't show up, kick them out. Those that don't pass, kick them out. But we also need to do that to our own citizens.
I understand that.
So it should be a record. You know, you get your real estate license. You get your law license. What do you have to do? You have to continue to go back to school. You have to take courses to keep updated. That's what should happen to people, to citizens.
Should have to go back to court every now and then. Divorce court. But, that's another class. Divorce. That's another class for you.
Traffic tickets, IRS.
Mm-hmm. We have our little classes from time to time. But if you didn't get the basics back in the day,
some people don't get divorces when they get older. Some people don't get tickets either. So, what's next, Al?
Well, are you saying you don't get any tickets, Melody? Is this a veiled compliment that you're fishing for, that you don't get any tickets?
I know people who haven't.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think Abraham Lincoln had any.
Didn't?
No, and George Washington, I don't think he got any. But nowadays, if you have an automobile, you have to get tickets, Melody. It's the way they supplement their incomes.
Mm.
If you always go to the speed limit
and you always do the things you're supposed to do, which I know people do, you don't get tickets.
You will. You'll see. it's like the VIX and no volatility. Sooner or later, watch, these people are going to get a ticket, Melody.
Okay, what's next?
I don't know. Here's an article talking about the dollar. This is the dollar's worst year since the Plaza Accord. Entering 2017, the U.S. dollar index has been up 4 years running on a broad trade-weighted basis, with 8.5% gains in 2014, 10.7% appreciation in 2015, and a more modest 3% move upward in 2016. The last year was less dramatic move, but from May 2nd of last year to the 15-year peak on January 7th of this year, the buck was up almost 9.3%, and it translated into 14.5% at an annual rate. Unfortunately for greenback bulls, things have gone wildly off script since. The dollar has reversed its entire May 2016 through January 2017 rally in a move that's frankly shocked the foreign exchange world. For the broad trade weight dollar, this was the worst year on record through last Friday. Given the U.S. economic data has actually held up quite well, and there have been no radical policy shifts from the FOMC, that's a pretty staggering move. What happened? All right. On a narrow major currency basis, the U.S. dollar index is just as weak. As shown, this is the worst year to date through September 1st since 1986, the year following the Plaza Accord agreement to devalue the U.S. dollar, and the second worst year ever after this week's decline, besting the 10% devaluation that endured in 1973. And then all the point is that the dollar has been in a serious state of decline for the last several months, and it's likely to continue to do so, which means price of gold is destined to go up, and we're destined to listen to a couple more commercials. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned.
Won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Grocery store. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Where did you move from to Texas?
Illinois.
And they didn't pass up there? Illinois.
We were just talking during the break. When I first moved down here to Texas in 1980, I was amazed. And one of what amazed me, what really struck me at the time, is the women in Texas. They got dressed up to go grocery shopping. Back in Illinois, you'd see women walking around. They had their slippers on and hair and curlers and rest, that sort of thing. They didn't care what anybody thought. All right? Down here in Texas, these women were looking good. And they made it their business to look good. Nowadays, I don't know if they still do that or not. I don't think they do really to the same
extent. That was the 80s, Al. I mean, I was living in Arizona, and
it was different from Illinois.
You know what? There used to be a time when men would wear suits to baseball games. There was a time when,
umpires now, Melody.
Everyone dressed differently and always to the occasion. And I'm always dressed when I leave the house. Makeup and everything else. I mean, that's just something you do. So I don't know where you lived in Illinois, but
I'm just telling you.
I did trade my high heels.
It didn't bother me in Illinois. It didn't bother me, but when I moved to Texas, I was much amazed.
You know, I mean, people in Europe, I mean, look how we certainly have relaxed our attire here in the United States. And, you know, when I was over in Europe, I mean, they dress accordingly all the time. I mean, they're always neatly dressed and no T-shirts, no jeans, no shorts, slacks and more to the black. It's like everybody wears black. They don't wear the bright colors, at least in London and so forth. They don't wear the bright colors that we wear over here. It's, you know, subdued colors, and but all professionally dressed most of the time, 24/7. But and what I always amazed me
when you were there.
Pardon?
What did you think about England when you visited?
In what way? Just.
Well, one of the things that surprised me is I've seen the movies I grew up on. We see England, all right, jolly old England. We might see Robin Hood. We might see the Knights of the Round Table. There's a bunch of things we might have seen. And we could see modern movies about English spies, Michael Caine and the Ipcress Files, things like that. And always I had the impression that England was clean and prosperous and whatever. And I found out, I wound up getting hold of some movies on England that's just surprised me. It impressed me as not just subdued, but grubby compared to what I had seen all my life. I'd seen something bright and exciting. And I saw some of the movies, detective movies and the rest of that sort of thing. And they showed me a different side of England that I had not seen before in the movies. I haven't been there myself, all right? But I was curious if you noticed anything like that. Were you surprised that England appeared to be more or less prosperous, more or less impoverished than you had supposed before you got over there?
I think it's almost like the tale of two cities to some degree, just like what we experience here in the States. I mean, you have, you know, areas that are prosperous, wealthy, and you have other areas not so much. And I had gone to both sections of London for different purposes and so forth. But I think when you're dealing in London, which is, you know, one of the wealthiest cities and a very high financial district in Europe, the financial district of the world, I think, you do. I mean, you feel the wealth, you feel the grace, you feel... but yeah, you could kind of feel the undertone to some degree. And what I found fascinating, too, is, you know, we walked, you know, across the bridge into this area where you could walk along the river. And here in the States, whenever you have people that can gather and walk along the river and so forth, and I'm thinking of Ocean City and the boardwalk, you have all kinds of hamburger places, French fry places, ice cream places, taffy places, popcorn places, food. And over there, there was one little ice cream stand. Mm. And there was nowhere, I mean, if you wanted food, you'd have to go into a regular sit-down restaurant. And certainly, we all know that America isn't the fittest place in the world. And so, and over there, people walk a lot. Same way, all of Europe, people walk a lot. They're a lot more fit. And you don't see very many chubbies over there. Like I said, they don't wear tennis shoes. They're not in shorts and t-shirts, and you know, they're dressed professionally. And certainly, when you're over there and they know you're visiting, and you know go to the hotels and so forth and whatnot, you know, it's pretty much, you know, the service is, you know, pretty much the same. There's some places you'd go where certainly you are much better. But they do take and the one that caught me the most, I don't mean to tell people about my story and so forth, but the, who is that famous cook from?
Gordon Ramsay?
Gordon Ramsay. They don't like him over there. They think he's terrible. They think he's an awful chef. He started out good. And then he started expanding into France and to Paris. And it was the same thing that he had in London. And then when he cheated on his wife, it's like they didn't have anything to do with him anymore. They don't think much of Gordon Ramsay over there in the restaurants. And we went to one of his restaurants over there to have dinner. And on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say it probably was a 5 or a 6. I mean, I wasn't impressed at all by it. And so he might have a different career here, but he knows how to market himself here in the United States. And I think the people of the United States certainly, you know, don't care whether he fooled around on his wife, cheated on his wife, you know, really doesn't, you know, we pretty much eat anything over here. So, you know, you see the differences like that. And I, you know, it's, you know, does it mean anything? No.
Just, I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting. One of those things, you see certain contrasts, and sometimes they're illuminating. You understand things a little bit better when you see two sides of the same
coin.
Yeah,
so he came over here and made millions. He was almost bankrupt. I'm not even sure if he didn't file bankruptcy over there, but he was almost bankrupt. He came over here, and, you know, he marketed himself, branded himself, and, you know, had, you know, successful programs and open restaurants over here. And, you know, as again, we pretty much eat anything over here. We're not too picky when we go into restaurants. And he was successful over there, not so much. So, what?
Well, I guess it's not, you can either serve the food your audience wants, or you can find the audience that wants your food.
And you know, it's just, you know, like
he had to cross an ocean maybe to find an audience that wanted his food, but that's doing it the hard way. Usually people say, well, here I am, what do these people want to eat?
But there is a very elite type of feel sometimes over there, you know. And I don't know if it's, I love the accent, you know, maybe you get caught up into the you know, but they are very, the one tour guide that we had that took us to see Stonehenge, and he was talking, and I asked, he was telling us about it, and I asked him, you know, he was telling us about the crop circles and things like, the guy was brilliant. He was just just a book of information. And I asked him if he believed in aliens, because I wanted to, you know, I was just trying to figure out what he was thinking and so forth when it came to, you know, these the croppings, the circles. And he says, well, we really can't talk about that. He says, I've been reprimanded several times because in order to be a particular type of tour guide, there's only certain things that you can say. And if you're reported, you get your, you know, your green badge or whatever taken away, and you don't get the tours and so forth. You're not allowed to tour anymore. So they are guided to what they can and can't say.
So we, so you had a politically correct tour guide.
Well, you know, he told me anyway. We got along, you know, we got along pretty good. So, you know, he told me anyway. But I thought that was interesting, and you know, how they, you know, they are allowed to say certain things on these tours. And
how offensive is that? I mean, that's almost scary to me.
Yeah.
The tour guide. How long before the cab drivers are going to be told what they can and can't say to the customers riding in their cabs?
Yeah.
There is just something wrong.
Love the Queen.
What happened to freedom of speech? You know?
They love the Queen. They love the family. They love the, you know, you will never, ever hear one, she has an ugly shirt on today. You won't even hear that. You know, they have been taught properly. So it is interesting, and I love to hear about their, but they do make the best croissants. I mean, when you compare the croissants over here, I mean, it's pathetic. His wife, you know, because we were gone all day long, made us croissants, you know, as we were going on our tour. And I mean, it's just like these things were like almost loaves of bread. And they were so airy. There was like nothing inside. It was just the way a croissant is supposed to be. And over here, ours is so dense, greasy. And I mean, it is interesting. But anyway, she was a good baker.
Well, you should tell her to come on over and start her own
TV
program.
She
could follow in Gordon Ramsay's footsteps and show people how to make croissants.
Anyway, I'm sure people are tired of hearing about my, but I loved it. It was a very educational. I'd go back tomorrow if they weren't having so many problems over there. But I wouldn't travel anywhere in Europe today. But anyway. What's next, Al?
Oh, we've got an article here from Cointelegraph entitled, it talks about cryptocurrencies.
Wait a minute. House backs $1.2 trillion spending bill with more money for military. You had something there about Ron Paul, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Small article. This is from the Free Thought Project, and the headline was, Heroic Senator Vows to Hold Defense Bill Hostage Unless Congress Ends Iraq and Afghan Wars. Washington, D.C., Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky has vowed to delay a $700 billion defense bill until he is promised a vote on amending the use of a military force in Afghanistan and Iraq, aiming to end the wars in two countries. Now, apparently, he's vowing to delay everything, and what you're telling me is they just passed it. So
it looks like
his delaying project promise may not have worked.
And actually, I heard him interview. I saw him interviewed, and he was wanting to cut back on seven of the wars that we're involved in. But
I didn't know we were involved in seven.
Yeah, seven.
I think there should be a law. You can't be involved more than five, because I've only got five fingers on my left hand, and I don't think I can count to seven.
I think it should
wars.
Be involved in zero, but the Republican-led House on Thursday passed a sweeping $1.2 trillion spending bill that provides billions more dollars for the military while sparing medical research and popular community development programs from deep cuts that were sought by President Trump. So they're not even going to do the cuts. The vote was 211 to 198 for the massive measure that wrapped the 12 annual spending bills into one in advance of the end of the budget year on September 30th. Even though the Senate still must act, the government will keep operating through December 8th, thanks to the legislation. So House members spent the past 2 weeks debating the measure's $500 billion for domestic agencies. It's a lengthy breakdown of what was all included in there, but $1.2 trillion spending bill with more money for military.
Well, now we can afford to invade Canada.
Yeah.
and think the money we'll save because the logistics alone. I mean, it's not like we have to fly our troops and equipment all the way over to the Middle East. That costs money. We'll be able to just hop right across the border and invade Canada. I mean, this is a money. Got to have a war. And we can take Canada. I'm pretty sure we can handle them. It wouldn't take us more than maybe 10 years. You know, what really cracks me up, Israel gets into six-day wars. We get into wars that last for 13 years. What is the difference? The difference is Israel fights to win. We fight to expend more bullets and bombs so we can borrow more money to go deeper into debt and support the military-industrial complex. There's the difference. We could have six-day wars if we wanted a fight to win, but we don't do that. Our wars are designed to run up the debt, borrow more money, subsidize the military-industrial complex. That's what's really going on with our wars. Israel's been setting a bad example, I think. I think somebody, Trump or someone, is going to have to sit down and talk to Netanyahu and say, look, your next war is going to have to last at least 10 or 15 years. Five, minimum. Five. Drag it out. You know, make some money off this deal. We can't just be shooting people. Let's make some money. I don't know, Melody.
But I want to know with what I want to know with $1.2 trillion spending bill, feds collect record taxes, and we're still, what, $600 billion short. How are they going to do tax reform? How are they going to cut the corporate rate?
Not going to happen.
Even down to 20%, how are they going to do it?
It's just, they can't. We've talked about it on the program a time or two already, but I think they have to go into debt. Debt is not an accident. It's a necessity in a debt-based monetary system and a debt-based economy. That's where we are, and they will have more deficit financing and go deeper and deeper into debt. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, have a good evening, and may the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
Bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams I have a plan. If I got me away.